This is the Echo Network. A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past.
It's a place where I met my wife and my three children were born. And to this day, I'm so proud to call KC home.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's present.
Alex with a basket catch. They're going to send the runner. His throw, a great one! Alex Gordon with a tremendous Gold Glove play.
And a show that looks at Kansas City baseball's future.
With the fifth selection of the 2012 first-year player draft, the Kansas City Royals select Kyle Zimmer.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
April 2011, when gas was $3.84 a gallon.
What is it now?
About $3.84 a gallon.
Oh, there you
go. It's like $3.17 a gallon here in Kansas. It's like $3.07 if you cross over into Missouri. I don't know what it is in Lawrence.
I don't either. I haven't filled up my tank in a while.
Well, there you go. Must be nice.
Good old Hondas.
As I said, the other voice you're hearing is Michael Engel. We're trying out some new technology today, so we'll see how this turns out. If you listened to last week's show, we lied to you. We didn't put the interviews out yet. I'm still sitting on them. They're getting nicely flattened out, and we'll have them out soon. We really thought this was going to be an off week, and so we really held them back. And then we now have like a huge show. I think it's going to end up being a pretty decent show. The Royals did not fail us this week, Mike. They produced us some information. I guess let's go ahead and get started right away here. The first thing of the week, the biggest news, happy for some, indifferent to me, unhappy for others, is the trade of Brandon Sisk, and everybody just said who, for Irvin Santana. They also got $1 million from the Angels in that trade, but they will be eating $12 million of Irvin Santana's contract. To me, this says the Royals are willing to spend. To people like Nick Scott, it says they're spending half of their free agent budget on Irvin Santana. I think it's pretty brave to say you know how much the Royals are going to spend in free agency. What is your opinion on this Irvin Santana deal?
Well, there was a lot of talk, at least just speculation. I don't think it was actual rumors or any sources or tips or anything, but that the Royals were looking at Santana or Dan Haren from the Angels. And the Angels were looking to kind of dump some salary. So it kind of made a lot of sense for the Royals to at least explore these options, because it's a chance to get some significant and some proven arms into the rotation that they may not have had the opportunity to on the free agent market. Santana, his 2012 season was not good. There's no way to sugarcoat that any other way. He gave up 39 home runs, which is, I don't even know how you do that. And as a major league pitcher, that's just difficult to do. But he is coming off of a 2010 and 2011 season where, he was very good. He was, well above average. He's a guy who can strike out, almost seven batters per nine innings, doesn't walk a ton. And he's somebody who, from that 2010 to 2011 stretch, he threw 450 innings. And that's pretty good for a starter, especially when you're the Royals. And I think for at least a month and a half, they made sure to carry two long relievers because they knew that most of their starters weren't going to make it past the fourth, fifth inning. So the money is a lot, especially given what he did last year. But I think what the Royals are doing here is they think that he can turn it around, and it's the least favorite phrase when you're talking about Royals pitching, but he does have a track record. This isn't like Luke Hochaver, where his best season is still a below average ERA. This is a guy who at one point was an all-star, finished sixth in the Cy Young voting in 2008. So he's shown that kind of talent, and he's still only, 29 years old. He'll turn 30 in about 6 weeks or so. So you know, still relatively young. Pitchers age a lot better than hitters as long as they stay healthy. So I think it's a pretty decent pickup. It's not a game changer. It can't be the only thing that they do this offseason. I think you're right that it is showing that they're willing to pay up. I mean, David Glass just took on $12 million of salary. I mean, that's the most annual salary for a player that I think has probably been in Royal history, short of Gilmesh in his last year before he forfeited his final year.
Guillen, he was close to that.
Yeah, he was probably, I think he was $12 million each season. So, I mean, you're talking, you know, this is, you know, a franchise high kind of salary that we're taking on. And hopefully, you know, they're willing to do a little bit more.
Yeah, they paid the $12 million for Jose Guillen, but you're right, there is something that's got to happen more in free agency. And if Irvin Santana can do what the Royals have been able to do, and that's bring some of these guys back from the dead. You look at Farnsworth you've got Jeremy Guthrie and Paulino, and you know, mm-hmm. we've seen these guys that have came back from a year or two before and have really started to produce, you know, high quality. I shouldn't say high quality. They've produced good seasons. I know Nick Scott was being smart, like he does. And he, somebody had said that Santana had a better 2011 season than anybody else on the Royals. And Nick Scott goes, oh great, Santana comes with a time machine too. Well, apparently there's one that exists in Kansas City. Look at Guthrie. Look at, I can't remember names, save my life today. What is the name of the guy that was the Cardinals pitcher? He was a pitcher / outfielder. It was a pitcher, then he moved to the outfield.
You mean Enkiel?
Enkiel. He came to Kansas City and looked like a Major League Baseball player. Frank.
That's a little generous, but yeah. But you're right. I mean, they have been able to take some of these guys like, you know, Melky Cabrera, and I think you were going to say Jeff Francoeur.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you're able to kind of get a little bit out of those guys. Pitching, it's different. Sometimes pitchers can just kind of lose it, and I hope that's not what's going on with Santana. But, you know, it is something that could be out there. It's, you know, they were able to bring in Dave Island, and he got Tim Collins to change a few things, and Tim Collins had, you know, a better season than last year. Guthrie came in, and they made a couple changes with him, with his delivery, and, you know, he looked like a totally different pitcher. Part of that, I think, is leaving Coors, but I think part of that is also just being, you know, with the Royals, and they were able to turn him a little bit the right way. Paulino's a really good example because he was really bad with the Astros. He was really bad with the Rockies. And for those 7 starts last year, he looked great until he got hurt. So, you know, guys like Santana, it's worth the risk, especially since he does have, you know, a long track record of being successful. He's kind of up and down, but, you know, he's somebody, if he was the number 2 starter, I think the Royals would be a lot better. If he's the number 3 starter, I mean, you'd almost have to actually get excited and not just be fooling yourself. Because I think that is, you know, just, like I said, they can't stop here. They have to go a little bit further. If for some reason the Royals were able to get Jeremy Guthrie back in, I think that would help. They're probably going to have to trade somebody. You know, and that may be the best avenue to go with. I know Greg Schaum has been a big guy on this idea that the Royals either won't be able to spend or won't be able to keep up with the spending of other teams. And that's certainly possible, because you have to convince those guys to sign here. If it's a trade, like in this situation, Santana didn't really have control of that. He didn't have a choice. You know, he was going to be coming to Kansas City. And, you know, that gives the Royals a little bit more ability to go out and get the guys that they want, because they don't have to compete. They just have to, they don't have to convince somebody that they're going to be better. They just have to convince the general manager to take their deal. And that gives them a little bit of an advantage in that sense, because they don't, you know, they're only competing with, you know, what other offers are out there and what they can offer prospect-wise, flexibility-wise, things like that. And in this case, they were willing to take on some payroll that the Angels were trying to dump off. So it really kind of worked out for both teams. or at least we hope it works out for both teams.
You were talking about Royals playing for Jeremy Guthrie. This show is being recorded on November 3rd, and he did become a free agent either late last night or earlier today. And there's been talk that the Royals could be a bit of a player in free agency. I'm going after a couple of the top 50 free agents, and I'm trying to find this story because I honestly don't remember who wrote it. But
I know they're possible to be – like they've been kind of rumored about Sean Markham through the whole process. Anibal Sanchez I think is everybody's kind of favorite target. Greinke's obviously the main guy, but – you know, the likelihood that he's going to sign in Kansas City gets even lower and lower. Just, you know, oh, there's another minute, less chance he's going to sign here. Just because he's going to be so expensive. He's going to be 20-some million dollars a year, 5-6 years, and should be worth it. But the Royals, you know, even being willing to go out and spend, aren't going to be able to keep up with that.
Well, one of those free agents that is in the top 50 on this article that I now can't find was Joaquin Soria, who, as expected, the Royals did exercise a $750,000 buyout because, frankly, Joaquin Soria was not worth $8 million next year. There's a good chance he comes back, but you are taking a real chance on Joaquin Soria at this point. He's not, you know, the Mexicutioner anymore. I know he doesn't go by that name anyways, but that's not going to be the pitcher you even get back. When you get a guy that's had two Tommy John surgeries, you're talking a little bit of a drop off, and there's really not a lot of information on it as far because there's not been a whole lot of players that have had the double Tommy Johns. But at some point, you got to say enough is enough for a pitcher that all of a sudden he's a, you know, a full impact pitcher, a full effort pitcher, and now all of a sudden he's having injury problems. What is a Joaquin Soria worth if you're the Royals?
I don't know. That's really tough to figure out because I think whatever offers he's going to get, it's going to end up being one of those deals where they put in a lot of incentives for, you know, either appearances or innings pitched or things like that. And some of that even depends on how they intend to use him. You know, if somebody brings him in thinking he's going to be their closer, well, you know, that's a lot to entrust to a guy that he's not even throwing full distance yet. He just started throwing at the beginning of this month. So he's still got a long way to go as far as his rehab. I don't know that he's going to be ready to start the season. It might be really close. It might be like middle April, end of April, something like that. So essentially for 2013, you might get 5 months out of him. And, you know, like you said, there's not really a lot of precedent. I mean, there are some cases, but most of the time, if you've had a second Tommy John surgery, you know, the performance really does kind of take a dive. Now, Soria being a reliever, maybe he can kind of limit that. Plus, he was so good for so long that it could be something where, you know, a bad Joaquin Soria is still better than a lot of really decent pitchers. So I don't know. It's tough. You know, I'm not sure what you pay him. You know, do you start at $1 million base and then kind of go from there? It's really difficult to kind of gauge that market. And I think a lot of teams are probably struggling with that. And that might even be part of why he's more likely to end up staying with Kansas City, because there's familiarity there. And, you know, they can kind of work around him and offer him some things that maybe he just doesn't know is available at other teams. You know, I'd like to have him back. I think he can still be effective. You know, Kevin Scobie has mentioned in the past that this could be the perfect time to try to stretch him out to be a starter, which is an interesting idea. And if it didn't work, you could always try him in the bullpen again. So, you know, I think it's a move everybody kind of expected to buy it out, because you can't pay him $8 million when you don't know what you're going to get. So it's, you know, shouldn't be surprising to anybody. I think it's interesting to see what happens from here. And I guess we'll see. I mean, I don't know if there's a time frame for when people are going to sign him or not.
Regardless if he comes back or not, do you keep Greg Holland and his horrible walkout music as the closer for 2013?
Yeah, I think you do. I think, you know, unless he struggles at some point and Soria did come back and, you know, regained the old form, You know, I don't think there's any kind of controversy there. I think even if Soria did come back and have another year like he did in 2010 or 2009 or any of those very good years, you know, I still think they're going to end up starting him in like the seventh inning, and then maybe he'll pitch more in the eighth inning and kind of work him up into those higher leverage situations in those later innings. Just because, you know, you never know. I mean, that he could have a good run of 12 innings and then completely drop off. And you just don't know when that cliff is coming.
We're going to take a real quick break right here. We're going to come back and talk about some 40-man moves, the Golden Gloves, and some crazy times on Twitter and in baseball yesterday, and some loosely related Royals news along with the mailbag. So we'll be right back on the other side.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. No love letters, talking to the wall.
Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends, the best pizza in Kansas City, and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn. Tell him the Royal Man Report sent you.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Bowl. I like this time of year. Like I said, I didn't really figure we'd have a show this week because it was going to be a slow week, but with just a few pieces of Royals news, like the Golden Gloves, or the Gold Gloves. I don't know why. It's not the Golden Globes. That's an award show. The Gold Gloves. Given to the best quote-unquote defensive players, but as you have said, it seems that offense plays into these decisions as well. We actually talked about that last week with the Fielding Bible, and you're a big Brendan Ryan fan, and he did not get a gold glove as he should have, which is a travesty. And you got to kind of wonder what's going on with this award. I mean, if it's going to be an offensive award, then call it what it is, the best all-around player at that position. That's fine. But if it's a defensive award, which is what you're led to believe it is, then it should be on. It shouldn't matter if the player hits 100. If they're the most amazing player at their position, then that's how it should be counted. Regardless, that's not the case. There was finalists for the Royals of Alex Gordon, Mike Moustakas, Eric Hosmer, and Jeff Francoeur. The last three did end up as runners up, but Alex Gordon takes home his second straight Gold Glove. We kind of talked about this last week when we were talking about the Fielding Bible stuff. How awesome is Alex Gordon? I mean, he went from being a third baseman to this left fielder, and he did suck with the bat in the beginning of the season last year, but he just makes the most incredible plays, and I think that's one thing I'm really going to miss about being at the park every day like I was the last few years. This coming year is seeing plays like Gordon running up and basket catching a ball in his glove. I mean, the ball literally hits his glove, and I'm not even sure he ever truly catches it. It, like, hits his glove, and he either flicked it up or it bounced up, takes it to his hand, throws home, and nails the guy out at home because he was tagging up. And it was just all one fluid motion. He shouldn't have caught the ball, let alone thrown the guy out. I mean, the things that Alex Gordon does in left field, can you think of another – what outfielder does he remind you of defensively, if anybody, or is he just kind of recreating that position?
That's a tough question. I think the Royals have had some decent left fielders. David DeJesus is really good in left field. You know, but when you look at a guy like him, he does play it, I think, a little bit differently because he has that third base kind of mentality that he's always had. I think there was a lot of kind of theorizing last year, or I guess we can call 2011 last year, or something like that, where all of his assists, you know, people kind of gave him credit because he had that training at third base for so long where, you know, you have to make a quick play, you have to charge the ball, you have to get it in a much smaller window if you're throwing it to second or first than generally you would throwing from the outfield. And some of those things translated very well to him in left field. So I think he plays it a little bit differently just because he has, you know, he's always been a third baseman until, you know, 2010 when they moved him into the outfield. So, you know, just a great athlete, probably the best athlete on the team, works hard, you know, just comes in and gets it done. And, you know, it doesn't help that he's got an incredible arm to start with. So, you know, I don't think he's reinventing it so much because it is left field, you know, and left field's not as high on the defensive priority list as like center field. But if you have a really good defensive left fielder, you can do a lot of things. So, you know, I think it's good to have him over there. And I think what he's done there, you know, is better than, you know, anybody in baseball in left field. So, you know, I'm kind of glad we made that move.
One thing I wanted to mention, and I kind of let get away from me in the last segment, but there's a great article in the Kansas City Star today by Pete Grethoff. I'm not familiar with him, but he wrote Guthrie's officially a free agent. One thing that he had put in there, or the tone that he uses, is that Guthrie really wasn't interested in signing before he had a chance to go take a look. So he's gonna go and look at what's out there. He made 8.2 last season. I don't expect him to make any less these coming seasons. Had he continued a mediocre run since getting to Kansas City, that would have changed things. But he was good. He was 5-3 with a 3.16 ERA and 14 starts. He was good for the Royals. Yeah. He wasn't great. He had some interesting blow ups, you could say. And he's got a few years on him. He's 33 years old, which is a year older than I am. But in baseball player years, that's old. Agent. And so, yeah. So he's an ancient pitcher, you know, that should be coming on the downside. And he's looking for 2, 3, 4 years to get him, you know, into Nolan Ryan years and pitching when you're 40. So, so we'll see where that works out. But it's going to be hard to get Guthrie, I think. I did want to jump back to that real quick, but I wanted to keep rolling on too. I really do hope he comes back. I think he's the right kind of guy for this team. You know, another one of those, as we had that show on sayings of Kansas City sayings that make your skin crawl, like the process and what have you. That's definitely starting to get in there. The right 53, you could say. So the right 40. For Kansas, for the Royals, or the right 25, whichever route you want to take with that. Continuing on with what we were talking about, though, Moose, I thought, was the one for me that I thought could have really won a Gold Glove this year. Francoeur didn't look as good this year as he did last year in any aspect of baseball. I mean, he didn't have good. He didn't seem to move to the ball the same way. He seemed to have Dyson disease for a little while this year and made some really, really bad moves on balls. Maybe he always did, but he just seemed like this year he just never really got it in control. Hosmer does that stupid picking motion, which has caused errors.
Nobody likes that.
Yeah, and it caused the error that was charged to Escobar during Jeremy Guthrie's almost no hitter. And that transitions me cleanly to talking about Alcides Escobar, who was quote unquote left out of the picture. He was probably in the conversation at some point because he does make incredible plays at shortstop, but he was tied for the second most errors by any shortstop, tied with Asdrubal Cabrera and behind Starlin Castro. And he was in about the middle as far as fielding percentage went. So really he didn't deserve a finalist look per se. He did not have as good of a season this year as he did last year. Now last year you could say that he definitely he was definitely a Gold Glove style shortstop, but this year he didn't quite have it. So we'll see if he can round that out next year. And I sometimes think he tries to do too much.
Yeah, I think that kind of comes into it. The thing about errors is that you can't commit an error on a ball you don't get to. So if you're Unieski Betancourt, let's say, and there's a ball that's hit deep into the hole on your right side from shortstop, and you go after it in your Unieski Betancourt and you don't have any range, you're probably not going to get to that. It's probably going to go into left field for a hit. No problem. If you're Alcides Escobar, he can get to that ball. He might be able to make but it could be something where he makes a bad throw, he bobbles it, something like that, that they end up ruling an error. That if he just hadn't gone for it, there wouldn't have been an error. But I think generally if you look at him, you know, he makes a ton of plays. Like, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I would imagine he's probably first or second in total chances as among shortstops, which means he gets to everything. You know, he's just able to get to everything. And, you know, I think it's just it's tough to judge defense because that aspect of how many plays they get to versus how many other players can get to isn't overlooked in kind of the traditional stats. So it's kind of tricky. I think there are also times where he might even get bored a little bit. I think I've mentioned this before where, you know, he knows he can get to those. So sometimes, you know, he'll maybe bounce a throw or something like that. And, you know, that's just something that he's got to, you know, maintain that focus. You know, I think he can definitely do it. There is – it's kind of weird because if you look at some of the advanced stats for defense, which are still kind of being refined and kind of developing to be where they tell a clearer picture – he doesn't rate very well in those either. So it's really this kind of weird disconnect between, you know, what you see on the field versus what the numbers say, which is strange because it's kind of a reverse money ball, you know, sabermetric kind of thing where most everybody can look at him and say that, yeah, that's a very good shortstop. But the numbers kind of disagree. It's really strange. He's a weird, really weird case. You know, I think – as he gets older, he's going to be able to make some of those plays more consistently. And, you know, as long as he's making those spectacular plays too, I think he'll be up for consideration very soon.
I think it's a maturity thing. You got to remember, this guy has not been a professional or has not been a major league shortstop for very long. And he's going to have a lot of years in front of him. And he's going to make some, you know, Ozzie Smith, Cal Ripken style plays throughout his career, but he's going to, like you said, fall asleep on a few plays or he in the maturity, there's got to be a point when he's got to realize I'm going to eat this ball, you know?
Yeah.
There's throws that don't need to be made. If you're in a game where you're up, you know, 3-1 and there's nobody on and the guy's going to first and the ball is in that gray area, those are balls that he needs to learn to eat and then just trust that the next ball is going to stay in the park. And of course, if you had decent pitching, you could do that. But
you can trust that a little bit more
with our current starting staff. You probably couldn't do that. But so, and maybe, you know, maybe that does play into it for a guy like him. He knows what's on the mound and yeah, maybe he just wants to get through it.
I have to get this out right now because we might not have opportunity to get it later.
In other roster news, or in roster news, I should say, a few 40-man moves had to be made. All guys had to come off of the 60-man disabled list yesterday, so that brought Duffy and Paulino back to the 40-man roster, and it meant that Jeremy Jeffress, Tommy Hotovy, friend of the program, and Jason Bourgeois, all gone. And Blake Wood was claimed by the Indians as they tried to sneak him through. I thought the Blake Wood thing might get a little bit of fever on Twitter, but really it didn't. People seemed really okay with that. It wasn't like earlier this year when the Royals lost, again with the names. The Loogie. God, I really suck at this. You'd think I was a podcast host or something. Who we lost to the Giants.
Oh, Jose Maharis.
Yeah, Maharis. And everybody was up in arms and wasn't quite the same fever for Blake Wood.
Now, there's a lot of indifference. I mean, I think he did well. He was pretty much right around league average. His second season was a lot better than his first season. But at the same time, you know, he's fairly old for, you know, being a young pitcher. You know, I think he's 26, maybe turning 27. So it's somebody that didn't really figure in, like somebody like Aaron Crow or Lewis Coleman or some of those guys. He is 27 years old. So, you know, losing him to Cleveland, it's not that big of a deal. He was going to be eligible for arbitration for the first time. And he's a Super 2, so he gets 4 years of arbitration. So, you know, coming off Tommy John surgery as well. So I think you're looking at a guy who, you know, there's a lot of kind of warning signs there that this isn't somebody that they really need to spend a lot of time on. He could be very good. He's a former guy who's been ranked in Baseball America's top 30 prospects for the Royals, going as recently as, I think, 2009, maybe even 2010. So, you know, it's possible he can still do something. He throws hard. But, yeah, I don't think there's a lot of outrage because a lot of people just didn't care. I think it's just indifference.
And I think you're seeing a lot of that around the and that's something that they've been talking about a lot on 610 too, is the apathy for sports in Kansas City. We're just, as a fan base, so beat down. And
can you blame them?
Right. If Jeff Herr gets done with his housework, he's trying to sell his house. By the way, if you're in the market to buy a house, I know of a good one down in the Brookside area that's going to be on the market very soon. So stay tuned for that. I'm sure that'll be a sponsor here before long. So on that note, though, the Royals cleaned up the roster a little bit. One little note is Jeremy Jeffress now will have to keep his nose clean, so to speak. He's got to stay off the wacky weed because if he gets one more pot violation, not being on the 40-man, he will be thrown out of baseball because that'll be his third strike. So this is a big deal for him in not being on the 40-man, which is why he was originally added to the Brewers 40-man. What that does mean is that friend of the program, Ryan Verdugo, still a Kansas City Royal. We talked about him, the whole 40-man worries. We talked a little bit with him about that in the interview that you'll hear at some point. And also friend of the program, Brian Pena, still a Kansas City Royal. However, the Royals signed Brett Hayes from the Marlins off waivers. Does this mean that maybe they're thinking about going away from Brian Pena and maybe giving Manny Pena another year in the minor leagues? But, I mean, you're talking about with Brett Hayes, you're talking about a .221 lifetime hitter with 8 home runs and 27 runs batted in as of August 6, 2012. Is this a guy that they're hoping to get into AAA somehow? Or what was the thought process with picking up Brett Hayes, in your opinion?
I think they're just kind of acquiring depth and pulling in all these different players. You know, we saw last year where they had Adam Moore up at the end of the year, and they had him stashed in Omaha for a while. You know, I think they're just trying to get as much depth as they can to try to sort out who might be an option as a backup. I mean, ideally, Sal Perez is going to be the guy most of the days. As long as, you know, he doesn't get hurt or doesn't have any complications from his injury last year. So, you know, that's what you're kind of hoping for, that the backup's not going to have to play that much. And in the case of Hayes, yeah, he hasn't done very well. He does have a little bit of power, but, you know, as most catchers go, doesn't really walk a lot, probably not a lot of speed. So I think it's just kind of a filler. It's very possible that he might not even make it to the next round of roster moves just because, you know, somebody's got to go somewhere. But it could be where they try to move him into AAA and maybe, you know, outright him down that way. You know, I don't see him as a big threat, but it is something that, you know, it bears monitoring because it could mean that they are looking for somebody to kind of fit in behind Perez, and Brian Pena might not be that guy. I mean, he's not going to make a lot in arbitration, but he's going to be making more than some guys might be able to make. So
he's making more than Manny Pena is going to be making next year, to say the least. And isn't necessarily, as much as we like Brian Pena here on the show, he's not necessarily a heck of a lot better option for a lot of different reasons than Manny, other than he's a vet and kind of knows the pitchers and knows the Royal way and what have you. But it's not too much that if they lost him, it wouldn't be a huge loss for the team.
I think he'd latch on somewhere else because, you know, he's a good team guy and guys like that. I could see Brian Pena as a coach in the big leagues. You know, I think I could see him as a decent backup catcher from a lot of teams. You know, maybe he's a guy who's going to bounce around the last, you know, whatever 5 years of his career or whatever. But I think there's going to be a lot of people who will be willing to take him on. It's just you kind of have to know what your expectations are. And, you know, I like him. I've always kind of liked him. I've always kind of thought he deserved a little more look than he's always gotten. But, you know, he's not going to be an all-star. He's not going to be a guy you can really put out there for 120 games out of the year and expect him to be, you know, a big contributor. But I think he's, you know, worth playing. I think he's probably the best backup catcher we've got around right now. Manny Pena, I think they're kind of stashing him a little bit more too. He's definitely the backup of the future.
Well, we'll see what happens the next couple of weeks. It'll be interesting to see nonetheless. Also yesterday, the Royals also picked up on waivers Guillermo, and I went off the page, but Mike was good enough to give me a pronunciation here. Guillermo Moscoso.
Yes.
And that's for those of you spelling phonetically, it's M-O, capital M, lowercase O-H, dash, capital S-C-O-H, dash, lowercase S-O. So you can put that in your phonetic pronunciations for players, and God knows we need them around here. We definitely have had troubles. So it'll be a fun one to say if he does make it to the big leagues. Another Rockies reclamation project. Yeah. And interesting, before we talk about Moscoso, I did want to bring up one Royals related piece that came across the wire. I can't remember if this was yesterday or earlier today. Looks like 12:36 PM. So earlier today, Indians acquire infielder Mike Aviles and infielder / catcher Yan Gomes from the Blue Jays for pitcher Ismael Rogers. This is interesting on a couple of levels to me, and I take it, Mike, you hadn't seen this yet?
I hadn't yet, no.
Okay, so this is funny on a couple of levels from a show perspective, because Mike Aviles is fine, and he's great and all. You got to look back at this. With Mike Aviles, there's so much on this deal to talk about, because you go back with this and you look back in time a little bit and you look at what they got for Mike Aviles when the Royals traded him, and they didn't get enough. This is definitely a loss by GMDM, because you look at what he has been traded for since, and the Royals definitely did not get enough in that deal, which I believe at this point they traded Mike Aviles for Brooks Pounders, friend of the show Brooks Pounders, but nonetheless probably not the biggest value guys. And since then, Aviles was traded for the new manager for the Red Sox, which is a big move. I mean, that is a big piece to trade for. Never even probably got a Blue Jays uniform.
Maybe not.
And has already been shipped off with Yan Gomes, who's a pretty decent catcher prospect, who's also apparently playing some infield. But I've seen some things on him, and he doesn't. I mean, he's not awful. He's not just a wasted player by any means. So I think that's interesting that he's heads now for Ismael Rogers. And why this is important is when we were talking yesterday on Twitter with a couple of other guys, we were talking about Royals reclamation projects, and you actually brought up Ismael Rogers as somebody that had done well for the Blue Jays, for the Indians, had done well for the Indians coming from the Royals. So it all kind of ties back together in the happy little small world that is baseball. But Moscoso has been shipped to a few different teams this way. He was designated for assignment by the Rangers, and then traded while being designated, he was traded to the Athletics for Ryan Kelly, and then somehow ended up in Colorado. I didn't look that far, but the reason he was designated for assignment was because the Rangers had signed Adrian Beltre in January of 2011. So, interesting details on his background a little bit, but he's a 28-year-old pitcher, 6'1", 198-pound right-hander, mediocre stats, from Colorado, but
worse than mediocre. It's just they were just bad. But it's Colorado, so I mean you kind of expect that. He's it's weird. He has had kind of a weird little story. I mean, he's signed with the Tigers as an amateur free agent in 2003, then got traded to the Rangers. Then got traded to the A's, then got traded to the Rockies. Now he's with the Royals. I don't know what to expect. I think he's interesting because he had a very good 2011, but a really bad 2012. So I'm not sure what to expect. He also went from Oakland, which is an extreme pitcher's park, notoriously, you know, pitcher friendly, to Colorado, which is notoriously not. And he performed exactly how you'd expect in both those spots. He had a really good year in 2011. I mean, he threw about 130 innings. It was 128 innings, 3.38 ERA. You know, looked great. His numbers looked great there. And then last year, most of the time he was coming out of the bullpen, gave up, you know, more than 12 hits per nine innings. Was walking more than about 3.5 per nine innings. I mean, that's just not good. That's 15, 16 base runners per nine innings. You know, no matter where you're at, even if it's Coors Field, you're not going to succeed that way. But, you know, if you look at his splits too, you know, you look at him last year, I think he had a 2.7 ERA in, 25 innings on the road versus about a 9 ERA at Coors Field. So he's worth looking into. He's another guy kind of like, you know, Chris Volstad, that maybe they get something out of him. Maybe they don't even keep him around through spring training. I think it's worth a shot. You know, I think that one of the things the Royals haven't done in spring training often enough is have guys starting spots. You know, last year they kind of had six. You know, they basically had Duffy, Chen, Hochaver, Luis Mendoza, Paulino. You know, they just had a bunch of guys kind of hanging around. And, you know, you kind of knew one of them wouldn't make it and the other five would be there. And now you've got some other guys to kind of push on top of whoever they may sign.
Aaron Crow got a drink of water as a starting pitcher in spring training, and then
I think he made two, and he just they just didn't really commit to it.
So I love Google. So I googled Guillermo Moscoso so I could look him up and have some information while we were talking here and see what interesting I can find. Well, right from the Google page, you can click on a link that is supposedly his girlfriend, and it appears to be correct, but apparently she has a Pinterest page and an old MySpace page. So there you go.
So
and she's quite easy on the eyes. We'll put it that way.
Well, he's a ball player. I mean, that's pretty much what it is.
Yeah.
If you go by Moneyball, then you know he's confident. So there's that.
Right. So there's that. From there, you know, it's
where do you go from there?
it's the important things in baseball, like how their wives look. You know. Or girlfriend. Well, I guess this would be his wife. So, or girlfriend that took his name, one or the other. You know what? I think at that point we're gonna let everybody catch their breath, and we're gonna take a quick break. We're about a half hour in, so we're right on about what I figured we'd be for this. So we're gonna come back, and we're gonna talk about some craziness on Twitter yesterday with the Cubs and the Angels and a man named Dan Heron, and then a little bit from the mailbag today, and then we're going to wrap it up, and I should have time to put at least one of the interviews on the end of this show. So we will be right back on the other side.
Hi, this is Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. Summertime is here, and that means one thing. Your neighbor's cat sneaks over and craps in your garden. No, of course, I'm just joking. Summer also means my neighbor borrowing your boat trailer and driving it into Smithville Lake, or mosquitoes, or your three-year-old drinking the air conditioner water. Haha, I guess what I'm saying here is that summer means different things to different people. And for 65 years, Kelly's Westport Inn has been a vacation for those summer problems ever since Randall Kelly poured his first frosty draft in 1947. 102 degrees and 99% humidity? Don't worry, Kelly's is air conditioned, and the drinks are as cold as ice. And when the heat breaks, Randall's Rooftop is ready for you to kick back, or you can head downstairs for some of the best live music in town. Summer is different things to different people, but to everyone in Kansas City, Kelly's Westport is your summertime bar. I'm Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. We'll leave the taps on for you.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. We're having a lot of fun, as we try to do every week here at Echo Sports and on kingsofkaufman.com/podcast, or you can still use the old royalmanreport.com and get there. I got to call Chris Kamler and get us the other web address one of these days. I just haven't taken the time to do so and redirect it correctly. But yeah, you know, royalmanreport.com still works. Oh, and if you normally watch the shows on YouTube if you enjoy the live broadcast. There won't be one for this show because we're testing some different technology. That's why if it sounds a little different, that's what's going on. So we're trying some different stuff. But we think we found a method that's going to make some aspects of the show better. And so we're working on that. So yesterday, I have not been on Twitter much. In fact, I've been using this. I'm testing out a beta tracking program for some different things you can track to better plan your life, how much time you're spending on stuff and stuff like that. And one of the things I, of course, had to track was Twitter. And it tracks how much time you spend tweeting and how many tweets you make and whatever. And in the last week, I've only made like 80 tweets, which you're talking 6 days. I've made 80 tweets. That's not much at all, especially not for me when I used to make 60 to 80. Well, heck, I had a couple of hours at one point where I was like 70, 75. I mean, I would blow – during baseball season, I could easily blow 2,500 tweets in a month. And I made an honest effort this year to really cut that back. And in the last couple of months, it's come just kind of naturally because life's had its ups and downs for us, and Megan possibly blew out either her MCL or ACL just living, not playing anything athletic or anything, and it really sucks. She's been in bad shape this last week or so. So I haven't really been on Twitter like I'd like and getting involved with everybody and enjoying the conversation. But Mike, you never fail, you know. For those of you that know Mike, he's a pretty dry person. I think that's a fair description that Mike would agree with.
Definitely, yeah.
He's not, you know, he's not Chris Candler. Chris was always the wild guy. He brought the big personality. I've got a big personality. Jeff and Mike are much drier. Jeff's got a bigger personality than Mike. But Mike, one reason that the show worked when Mike and I started doing this was Mike. He's got all of the facts, all the stats, and he's got that real dry, down-to-earth attitude. And then you've got me. I'm the big tights wearing, cape wearing, you know, super fan at the time and
son
big,
of a guy.
Yeah, big boisterous voice and I remember we used to make poor Gunnar work his butt off because he was always trying to get the levels to match up. I was always so loud, Mike was always so low. And moral of this story is Mike occasionally he's definitely worth a follow on Twitter at Michael Engel for all the reasons you listen to this show, but then also because every now and again you get the quips from Mike that just make you chuckle. And they're so well thought out that it's so funny how you come up with them. And I don't have it favorited, but last night Mike says something to the effect of Dan Heron was just traded to some minor league team for Joe Boo from Major League and a copy of Total Recall. And of course, I think it was DB Lesky or one of those guys goes, it's a good movie.
Yeah,
and which I agree. I want to see the new one. I really like the Arnold Schwarzenegger Total Recall. But Mike, you want to explain where that tweet came from? And I think when I saw it come across my phone as an ESPN alert, I think I had about the same reaction you did.
Well, last night was crazy. I don't remember what time it was, about 6:30 or 7 or something. There were reports coming out that Dan Heron, who was in the same situation as Irvin Santana, you know, needed his option to be picked up by the team, or, you know, they were going to, you know, have to decline it and he'd be a free agent. So they were looking to trade him. And there was a report coming out that there was a deal agreed to between the Cubs and the Angels to send Carlos Marmol to Dan Heron. And long story short, you know, it just kind of went, you know, all over to where it turns out that the deal got pulled away. But at different points, it was just like, nobody really knew if it had been traded, if this move had gone through. So, you know, it just seemed like just about anything could happen. So, yeah, the original tweet was like, Dan Heron has just been traded to the South Carolina Buzz, which is the team from Major League 3,
right,
back to the minors, starring Scott Bakula.
Which most people would remember. Well, people our age would remember from Quantum Leap.
Yeah, and also Ted McGinley from Married with Children. And the copy of Total Recall, just because it's random, you know, whatever. And then, yeah, Dayton Moore, I think it said that Dayton Moore had offered, I don't remember what he offered,
no,
but it was not.
I came back with, how did GM, because I saw that one come across, and this, that's why I jumped on Twitter, because I got it from ESPN, and it said, Dan Heron traded to the Cubs for Carlos Marmol, sources reporting. And so it was very vague. It was definitely ESPN doing the, we're hearing this, but it's not factual yet.
It was pretty much report. Like, it seemed like it was just done.
Well, the way that they reported it, they were showing that it wasn't done, but that it was very, very close. And so I saw that, so I jumped on Twitter because I'm like, how the Sam hell do we get Irvin Santana yesterday, but the Cubs get Dan Heron for Carlos Marmol? And because I was thinking, shoot, you give him Brandon Sisk and Aaron Crow, and I don't care, give him Greg Holland too. And you take Dan Heron in that 12 mil, and yeah, that's 24 million, but you're set. I mean, if you get those two and then maybe somehow can afford Jeremy Guthrie too, that's a starting rotation I can live with.
Yeah. There was a point where I kind of thought the Royals were going to swoop in once that deal broke through, and they'd be like, you know, here's Lewis Coleman, and you just let us know how much money you need us to take on, and we'll do it.
Right, and so I thought that was kind of where they were going to go with that, and like you said, it continued on, and then I've been helping Megan because she can't hardly walk right now, and she's still got to work because her job, Walmart, sucks, and she's in a hard spot right now. And so I haven't had a lot of time to be on Twitter, but then all of a sudden I see some tweets about, you know, the weirdness of it all. And Rainey's tweeting that, you know, yeah, the Royals may have missed on this, but 29 other teams also, or 28 other teams avoided him as well. Or I guess it'd be 27 'cause can't count the two involved, but 27 other teams avoided Heron as well. And what seemed like he was getting just given to a team. So obviously there's some injury concern or something there, or just the money was too much to take on. There's something more than what us Joe fan is seeing. And kind of then take us, Mike, on through how the night went and where it ended up with, frankly, Dan Heron being a free agent today.
Yeah. Some of the concerns are that, you know, he had some back problems last year and he's getting older. He's 33 years old. Didn't have a very good year last year. His velocity on his fastball has dropped. It's usually been around 91. It was about 88.5 miles per hour last year. So there's concerns, and I think that's probably why nobody else jumped in at the end there. But, you know, on Twitter, it was just nobody knew exactly what was going on. I mean, even guys like Ken Rosenthal, you know, from Fox Sports, who I think was one of the first ones to really mention it. You know, he had to backtrack as well. So it was all this, you know, just crazy stuff. At one point it was like they've been traded, but they're not. It's really weird. But, you know, Twitter being Twitter, you know, there's all kinds of, humor going on. Brandon Warren, who's a Twins blogger, said, you know, at this point, once the deal fell through, you could just look on the timeline for baseball fans, and they're all saying, well, maybe we can go get Dan Heron. What can we sign Dan Heron for? And he tweets out, everybody's team is going to sign Dan Heron.
And Brandon Warren, who is also a friend of the program, you want to talk about old school. Brandon was one of our first guests. He was our first, like, inside piece from the Twins because he's well connected in Minnesota, and he's at Brandon Warren, BrandonWarne. Definitely worth the follow. And as his profile used to say, yes, he will do your podcast. He was on ours before it said that before, but he's gotten pretty popular. He's actually gotten like a real writing gig, I think. So he's definitely worth the follow as well.
Yeah, so I had to retweet that. I said, everybody gets a start from him, and then he's on to the next team. So.
Right, right. And who knows, maybe by the time it's said, maybe by the time that it's said and done, he may play for two or three teams next year. It just reeks of another one of those older players that's on the backside of their career. And
you know what it reminds me of is Roy Oswalt.
That's what I was just going to say. Boy, yeah. We're on the same page, Mike. That's a scary, scary thing there.
I know.
But yeah, that's exactly what it made me think of.
It's like similar situations, you know, elite pitcher for a long time. They run into some back problems. You know, they're kind of in this murky area of where they're going to end up. Yeah, there's a lot to that, and you know, I think Royals fans both really wanted them. I know I wanted Oswalt. I know you did not. Whatever, you ended up right on that one. That's fine. I really want Dan Heron. I like Dan.
Just glaze over that little fact. You were right on that one, but whatever.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
Yeah, I'll take.
Yeah, I mean, I like Dan Heron. I've always liked Dan Heron. He's always been a guy who can, you know, control his walks and strikes out some guys. You know, been a good pitcher for a long time.
If you listen to Fantasy Focus on ESPN, their baseball fantasy show, you would know that you want to sign Dan Heron and then trade him at the All-Star break, because Dan Heron is notorious for having amazing first halves and not so good second halves. Now, last year, I think he did have actually a pretty good full year, but the Angels all really didn't play all that well for what they should have, at least. I mean, what were the A's doing winning that division? That still blows my mind. But, yeah, so it'll be interesting. I wouldn't mind Dan Heron. I don't feel like him like I felt about Oswald. Oswald had made it clear that he wanted to play for a playoff team, and he wanted a lot of money, and he wanted to be a starter, because that didn't work out for him, and all this other stuff. And he got what he wanted for the most part. He got $10 million to play half a season in Texas. And
he did start a couple of games.
And then he came out of the bullpen and looked like garbage, and I think he even got hit around by the Royals when he was here with the Rangers, which was fantastic. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Dan Heron. One other piece of Royals related news that I just came across the wire a little bit ago, and I should say Kauffman related news. Mariano Rivera has told the Yankees he'll be back next year. This actually makes me happy, because I don't want to see. I don't care what you think of the Yankees. I don't care what you think of the Red Sox or the Tigers or whoever it is, or if you want to cross sports, if I don't care if you hate the Broncos or whoever, you respect players that are great. And Mariano Rivera is a great player, and he is a classy player. There's never been reports of him doing anything illegal, either in the game or out of. He's always been a by-the-book kind of guy, and he got hurt on a fluke injury in our stadium, in Kauffman Stadium, the place that all of us fans call home in the summertime, our safe haven. He goes out and gets hurt and misses the whole year. And I felt bad for him, because that is not the way that a Hall of Fame career ends. It's just not. So I hope he comes back next year and has a good year. I don't want to say that I want him to have a great year, because that means the Yankees have a great year, and never want the Yankees to have a great year. But I hope Rivera comes back and looks like Mariano Rivera, because he deserves that.
Yeah, I think so. That's good news. There's also, maybe that makes it easier to get Joaquin Soria back too. I think that could have been a guy they would have looked at in New York. But, yeah, I think you're right. You get to, these guys, nobody would have wanted to see, Cal Ripken or Tony Gwynn get a career-ending injury, and that's how they go out. You look at Derek Jeter, who broke his ankle in the playoffs. You don't want that to be how he goes out. And even though he'll be back, who knows how good he's going to be next year.
Even Kirby Puckett, who had the to be a Hall of Fame player and then got glaucoma. And you're just like, I mean, Puckett was one of my favorites. Twin or not, he was one of my favorites. And I was saddened by him getting glaucoma like that and then ending his career, because he was a hell of a hitter. I mean, he was fun to watch. But I think the Mike, one more note on the Mike Avila thing as I continue to jump around. There are a lot of women in this city that are very happy with that trade, because that means they get to see him at least on TV, either at the stadium or on TV 18 times next year doing the Avila shuffle. And that makes a lot of the ladies in Kansas City pretty happy.
I thought you were going to go with the Jack Parkman thing from Major League 2.
Well, it kind of is. I mean, yeah.
Doing that little shimmy. It makes all the women in Cleveland yell.
Right.
And then he gets traded. He's doing that thing, that little shimmy. It makes all the women in Cleveland puke.
That is such a great movie. Just Major League and Bull Durham. It doesn't get much better for baseball comedies than those two.
Very true.
Oh, Bull Durham was on the other night, and I fell asleep watching it. I have it on DVD, so it doesn't matter. But I love that movie. It's so funny. Come on, meat. Anyways, we actually got a piece. We don't get a lot of emails, and we usually don't read them on the air, because they're I always say I'm going to, and then a lot of times I don't, because for one reason or another, they're either worded in a way that I don't think is fair, or it's something more for us guys to think about, or
technical, or they're this or that. Yeah.
This one, I'm actually going to read it pretty much word for word, because I thought it was a very good email. And it's an interesting email for all the things, like I think Mike's first response to this, when I forwarded this to the guys was, bet you weren't expecting that one. And and it's pretty much spot on, because this one definitely caught me off guard. But Aaron Hinsky from Omaha, Nebraska wrote in, and he wrote into RoyalManReport@gmail.com. You can write into that for this show or Echo Sports Report, which we're going to try to do one of those later, like I said, if Jeff gets his house taken care of. But the girlfriend's dad's over there, so I know he's tied up right now. But Aaron said, hey, guys, you put on a pretty darn good show. Actually, I think he said a pretty damn good show. Okay, we could have just stopped the email there. I'm kind of liking where this is going. I don't live in the Kansas City area, and it's nice to get a little bit of Royals talk during the off season. I do have one small complaint. Never goes well after somebody says they have one small complaint. Yeah. I heard Troy talk about some college football games during some past shows, but I follow Troy on Twitter, and I believe he's a Husker fan. He says he don't. He doesn't really talk about the Huskers on the Twitter account, on his Twitter account. Why is that? It just seems weird that he seems to like the Missouri Tigers and Kansas State Wildcats. By the way, the Tigers lost 14-7 to Florida. I was actually hoping they'd win that for BCS reasons. And the Kansas State Wildcats, they play tonight against Oklahoma State, number 24 in the nation, at 7 p.m. on ABC. Now, I don't necessarily dislike those two particular teams, but I'm not a person that believes you should be a fan. I'm a person that believes you should be a fan of only one team and stick with it. Don't be a K-State fan. Don't be a Missouri fan. I kind of compare it to people that follow Nebraska football and Creighton basketball. I know the Husker basketball team sucks, but I think you should be a fan of all Husker teams. That's the short little rant I have. Thanks, Aaron Hinsky, Omaha, Nebraska. I like this email for a lot of reasons. It's polite in his rant, and I always say, no matter what you think of us, as long as you're up front and you say, hey, this is what I like about the show, this is what I don't, you know, it adds a lot to it. Now, Aaron, I did email Aaron back directly, and I'll read part of that. But one thing that Mike had jokingly said in our responses back and forth is, if Troy tweeted about Nebraska as much as Mike knows I'd like to, they'd all drag me out to a cornfield and cut off my internet access so they wouldn't have to see so much of it. In fact, that did happen during the Big Ten, and I lost, as I mentioned in the email back to Aaron, I lost about 10% of my followers during that time, because they didn't want to hear about Nebraska. You know, I was a Royals account. They didn't want to hear about Nebraska football, and it was so bad, in fact, that I made a Husker Twitter account, and it gets too hard to manage, and that's where the joke comes that I have 18 Twitter accounts and what have you. And it gets too
hard. You do have 18 Twitter accounts.
I have two. And then I have the group accounts. But I have Colin Mayhem, which is my personal account, and I use it for roller derby and those kinds of things and talking about life in general. And I've used that one even less than I've used Casey Royalman recently. And then, of course, I have the Kansas City Baseball Vault, KC Baseball Vault, which you can tweet at us there, and I'll read those on the air as well, at KC Baseball Vault. Or if you tweet directly at Michael Engel or at Kings of Kaufman or at the Jeff Reporter, at Casey Royalman, those all find their way to us, and we talk about it on Twitter, and then we talk about it on the air too. You know, I emailed Aaron back, and I said, you know, thanks so much for the compliment. Now, to your complaint, I don't tweet as much in general as I used to, which we talked about earlier. I used to tweet so much, and we talked about that already. I did think it was interesting that he called me a Mizzou and K-State fan. I think that's more so because they're more relevant when it comes to college football than the Jayhawks. And
especially in this area.
Yeah, and Nebraska, frankly, the reason – for those of you that are Nebraska fans, the reason that I don't talk about Nebraska football is because I don't like Bo Pelini, and I don't think he's doing a good job with the program. And I'm not alone on that idea, but it's also not necessarily a popular opinion. There's a lot of people that really like Pelini and his hard-nosed attitude and what he's doing with the team. And really, it's hard to dislike a guy that, you know, loses 1 to 2 games a year, but we're Nebraska. It's like Kansas basketball. You know, we're expected to win. We're expected to be there at the end, and we haven't been in a long time. And that's hard because growing up in Nebraska, you don't have the Royals. You don't have the Chiefs. You don't have any of that. You have the Nebraska Cornhusker football team. That is what you cheer for. And then into my high school years, the volleyball team got real good, and that was cool too, but it's still not football. I did mention that I'm not a fan of any of the other particular teams. but we are going to talk about what's relevant, and the most relevant teams have been Missouri and K-State. I'm not a fan of KU, but I do have a man crush on Bill Self, which I admit to everybody. I'm not a fan of Mizzou, but heavily respect Gary Pinkel and what he's done there. In fact, most people on Twitter get on me for being a KU homer, which always makes me laugh. And then the minute I say something bad about KU, I get all these KU fans that say, I'm a Mizzou homer. So I'm doing it right because everybody hates me.
And well, Sam Mellinger has the same thing. Everybody calls him a K-State or Mizzou homer. And the guy went to Kansas. So, I mean, it's like
I got a mistake myself at after one of our shows. I didn't realize he went to KU, and I asked why he was such a Mizzou homer, and I felt like such an idiot.
He's just impartial. He just, you know.
He's doing it right.
Yep.
And then I had also noted that I'm not a big fan of KSU per se, but I love Coach Snyder. I think he's the best coach in the nation. He does it right. And I'd love to see the old Big Eight brother make a great run in the BCS. I said, now to the Creighton Huskers issue. Now, when you want to talk about that, I do root for Creighton. I have my whole life. It's not because I don't root for Husker basketball, because I do. In fact, if those two teams play each other, I will root for the Huskers, although you always know how that's going to end. And I adopted because they are a Nebraska team, and it's not like KU, K-State, in my opinion. So I went ahead and hung on to them as well. And then I did ask him what his Twitter handle was, and he didn't get back to me. So, Aaron, if you're listening, which I assume you are, tweet me on Twitter and let me know what your handle was, because I was just curious. But I do have a lot of Nebraska followers, and I will pop out, I'd say probably 10 to 15% of my off-season tweets, my non-baseball tweets, even on that account, will be Husker tweets. It's not going to be a lot because I'm only going to do it if I'm actually watching the game. Like right now, the Husker game just started at 2:30, I think, and I haven't – honestly, I couldn't even tell you what the score is. According to my phone, we're 4 minutes remaining in the first. It's 7-0 Spartans, which doesn't surprise me. And so, you know, I don't tweet a lot about it because we're usually recording on Saturdays, and that gets in the way of my college football watching. And which is a good thing for Mike and Jeff because they don't want to watch that disaster for KU anyways.
Not at all.
You know, we do this, and I go back, and I usually DVR the games, and I'll fast-forward through them or whatever. And then, you know, games like Northwestern, I stay away from Twitter because it makes me want to kill people because, first off, people are rude. And second off, I get very angry when the Huskers aren't very good. So I tend to stay off of Twitter those days. But that's a long-winded answer to our letter. But I love our letters. I would love to do a mailbag segment. We really don't get that many responses. I know Greg's real good about responding right on Twitter to us and some of the other guys. Jeff Parker, another one that's really good about letting us know what he likes on Twitter and what have you. So we all got a good kick out of that. So thank you, Aaron, for the letter. And I think on that note, that was a little more long-winded than I wanted to be on that segment. But
it was really long-winded.
But it's neat. So really,
whatever.
Don't expect anything less. So, I actually just missed a phone call from the girlfriend, so we probably should wrap this up. So that
probably ought to go then.
That. I'll try to work in. This show's going to be a little bit long, but I probably will go ahead and work the interviews into the end of it. According to this, no, it's an hour. It's always an hour. It's almost without fail an hour. It's going to be an hour and 4 minutes, plus the commercials will make it about an hour and six when it's done in post. So, yeah, I'll get them out, guys. I don't know when. I don't want to give you a two-hour show to listen to, though. But I'll figure it out, and I'll get them out because I think we're about ready to pick up. Business is about to pick up, as Jim Ross would say on the WWE. Business is about to pick up in the off-season, and so I'll probably have to put them out midweek at some point. A lot of things going on in my life as well. I'm trying to get a promotion or a move within my company, and if I do that, it's going to change things drastically. So it's going to put me on the road. So it may have an effect on when these shows are recorded and all that jazz too. But on that note, I'll let you guys know. Well, pay attention. If we have an ESR today, I'll get that out probably first, and so you'll already know about it. But definitely go listen to that if it's available. If not, we're going to try to get one either later this week or next week. But like I said, Jeff's trying to sell his house, so best wishes to him on that. And he's a big part of the program. We hate not having him here, but we know that he's got to take care of that first. So on that note, Michael Engel, any closing thoughts?
I forgot what show we were doing, actually. That was a long part. No closing thoughts.
For those that...
Let's go get Dan Heron.
Yeah, let's go get Dan Heron. How about that? My closing thought is I did go back and start 1969 on Out of the Park Baseball, and the Royals have never had a losing season in four seasons so far, but the owner hates me. I finished 15 games above 500, but 20 games behind the Twins. Do the math on that one. Playoffs and I got a score of 5 out of 100 on my season, 15 games over 500. But I'm in the fourth season and I'm headed into the playoffs. So I'm very excited to see, this team's led in the playoffs by a pitching staff that includes Paul Splittorff, and has Catfish Hunter coming out of the bullpen, and in the heart of the order are some names like, Hank Aaron and, yeah, it's a pretty good little team that I've managed to trade for. And following the rules of the game, I haven't cheated it at all. So I'm pretty proud of the team. And we're 98-63 headed to the playoffs. So on that note, we're going to get out of here. Tune in, kingsofkaufman.com/podcast. Kingsofkaufman.com gets everything you need. If you haven't read it already, I guess you could read the self-indulgent article about why I'm hanging up the cape. Just search Casey Royal Man. It should take you to it, or all good things that will bring it up to, as that was the first line of it. But check that out. It's got an audio and written portion, which was a great idea by Mike, because it did allow you to really hear my opinion on it and the way it should have been. So great job by...